Years ago, I was a teenager, 16 years old, 15, something like that. I was hiking with family and friends. We hiked over the spine of this continent, over the Continental Divide in Rocky Mountain National Park, and we went to a little lake, glacier-fed lake. That night, as I lay in my tent, I could look out and see the stars and almost no atmosphere, it seemed, between me and they. There was just light. And it seemed as though diamond dust had been smeared across the sky in the Milky Way. And I wanted to see this more clearly, so I took my coat and my sleeping bag and I went up towards the Continental Divide, found a huge boulder to lay down on, and I looked up at the stars. And at first I named stars and constellations. Then I began to think about the stars and how amazing it was. It seemed as if I could see them with nothing between me and the stars, clearly and fully. And I began to wonder if this is how the stars appeared if you were an astronaut walking on the moon. And because I was that kind of teenager, I began to wonder if you were on the Starship Enterprise, if that's how the stars would look. And that led me to think about the vastness of space and time. It opened my mind to galaxies beyond galaxies. And then there was one of those moments. I had this experience. It's one of those things that you really can't put into words. There's a sort of dissolving of all barriers. This experience of absolute oneness. That moment still echoes in my heart, echoes and moves me to this very day. But what I want to point out is that I could have had almost the same experience 1,000 years earlier, but it would have been completely different. I had been a part of the Crow Nation. Those are the people who lived near the Rocky Mountain Park. I could have gone up and looked at those stars. Mystical awareness has been recounted and affirmed in all human traditions. It always leads to this numinous awe. I love that word, numinous, because it has an edge of fear and overwhelm as well as joy. A numinous awe and a wondrous lifting of the spirit. It is one of the named sources of Unitarian Universalism. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. But 1,000 years before me, no one like I did would have imagined the awesome beauty of red giant stars, white dwarf stars, sunlight stars, neutron stars, nebula, all spinning in multiple vast spiral and globular galaxies. The relativity of light, the possibility of people traveling space and time, the physical facts of the universe, all would have been absent for mystics in the ancient world. For centuries, people have imagined that love or God moved the sun and other stars, but they would have thought nothing about dark matter or gravity wells. And the earth itself, the story of this earth spinning out of stardust, of chemical chains evolving into life and life evolving, changing until human beings stand upon the globe. None of these things would have come. None of these things would have lifted a person to wonder and awe on that rock, on that ridge 1,000 years before. But I think that my spiritual experience, though the same, always the same, was deeper, was more complicated, was richer because of the sacred revelation of the results of science. Better than built on small fragments of reality or one or other romantic images of the whole, all combined. Some say that science drives wonder from the world, but it enhances wonder. It adds to it. It adds details, practical, tangible, real details that transform my spirit and how I move and how I see and how I feel. Some say that the results of science drives goodness and warmth from the world. Life does have its hard edges. The earth has its hard edges. The ancient writer of the Chinese classic, Tao Te Ching, said that the universe treats all creatures as straw dogs. But if we combine the revelations of spirit and matter, if we let the results of science sit with the explorations of the mind and soul, then even the stars can become bodhisattvas. Bodhisattvas teaching the fullness of truth, the fullness of Dharma, calling us to wake up to unshakable joy, the truth beyond and within all suffering. There are some say that knowledge has driven all spirits and fairies and gods, even the one loving God from the universe. But for me, the web of life reveals the boundless riches of being. The Apostle Paul, in writing to other Christians, both in Ephesus and in Corinth, wrote about the secret that was being revealed through him, the secret of the riches of life that was in Christ. And I see that in the evolution of human life on earth, the boundless riches and resources of well-being that he named Christ. In evolution, I see what he named as the mystery which for ages past was kept hidden in God and is now given by God to reveal the goodness of life. I see in evolution and reason, in the results of science. I look to the stars, and I can look to the sea, and I can look to the distant chaparral-covered hills, and I can think of the second surah of the Quran with no dislocation. Wherever you turn, there is the face of Allah. Allah, all-embracing, all-knowing. Sacred knowledge. The results of science, the guidance of reason, does not throw cold water on sparks of wonder, but reveals more sparks. It shimmers in our blood, the mystery of life. It turns each of us from out of the DNA's double helix, all of us, all together. Fritjof Capra, the scientist and writer, said, "A page from a journal of modern experimental physics will be as mysterious to the uninitiated as a Tibetan mandala." Both are records of inquiries into the nature of this universe. Long ago, the ancient Hebrews told a story about the creation of the universe. My problem with that story is that they didn't know anything about dinosaurs and left them out completely. I noticed that Allison's story left out dinosaurs too. But now, Peter is going to sing to us a song about people who try to tell the story in a new way.
I guess I had heard when Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, the famous astronomer, was first learning about the story of the universe, and he, in college, he would wonder to himself, "My God, do people know about this?" And that's the kind of idea that kind of inspired. Inspired this song, you know, it's meant a great deal to me to be able to know these things. As you mentioned, Thomas, a thousand years ago, we didn't know these things. And for me, it's been an endless source of wonder and awe and spiritual enlightenment, really. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if, if in addition to having door-to-door evangelists for religion, we had door-to-door evangelists for science? So here's a song inspired by that idea. Because no, Neil, people don't know about this. Not all of us. All right. But first, a little tuning. Makes you wish I played piano, really, doesn't it? I saw two people walking down the street, and by the look of them, it seemed to me they were evangelizing door to door. So when they knocked on mine, I knew what for. I said, "No, thank you, I'm not interested. Have a nice day." And then one of them said, "Have you ever heard the story of the universe?" They must have seen confusion on my face when they said religion isn't why we came. Science is the only Bible that we bring, and how we are all a part of everything. Everything in all of space and all of time. Have you ever heard the story of your life? Have you ever heard the story of the universe? So I asked them, "Come in and sit down." I put on coffee and we talked about all of the 14,000 million years, atoms and stars and life. When it appeared, it seemed like magic, but it was real. The more I learned, the more that it began to feel like the holy word, the story of the universe. Here's the scat verse. Here we go. La 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 la. Much time had gone by, I couldn't tell. When we finally said thank you and farewell, and I heard a robin singing out so clear, and felt a little more excited to be here. And everywhere, the air, the houses and the trees, everything around me seemed to say to me, "Have you ever heard the story of the universe? Have you ever heard the story of the universe? Have you ever heard the story of the
the joy in this song and in the story. And the point in the song, we talk about religion and science as if they're separate things, but the whole point of this service is that they're not separate at all. And part of that is wonder. We find that wonder and that awe and the way in which it changes the texture of wonder and awe, but it's more than that. We do not stop with transcending mystery and wonder. It moves us. The revelation of the mystery cautions us in one way. It cautions us to ever believe that we know everything. It teaches us not to hold to idolatries of the mind and spirit, images that we make of the universe and put in place of the actual thing. But it also, once we have that humility, we don't just stop there. There are many religious teachers who kind of say, it's a mystery. Just hang with the mystery. We don't know. We don't understand their teachings. But this mystery encourages you to adventure on, to seek more understanding, to keep looking. Not to cling to the idols and the images that we have, but to keep trying to understand more. The method inspires us to be ever curious, to seek ever greater knowledge. People think they have it all figured out and they do not have the humility that they need to keep asking deeper questions. There's a writer and educator and naturalist, Chet Ramo. Peter turned me on to some of his writings. And in one of his marvelous books, he proposes this metaphor. All that we know, now and forever, all scientific knowledge that we have of this world, all that we will ever have, is an island in the sea of mystery. We live our partial knowledge as the Dutch live on polders claimed from the sea. We dike and we fill and we dredge up soil from the bed of mystery and build ourselves room to grow. Still, the mystery surrounds us. It laps at our shores. It permeates the land. Scratch the surface of knowledge, and mystery bubbles up like a spring. Occasionally, at certain disquieting moments in the history of knowledge, Galileo, for example, or Einstein, a tempest of mystery comes rolling in from the sea and it overwhelms our efforts and it reclaims knowledge that has been built up by years of patient work and it forces us to retreat to the surest, most secure core of what we know. There we huddle in fear and trembling until the storm subsides and then we start building again. Throwing up dikes, pumping, filling, extending the perimeter of our knowledge and our security. Knowledge is an island in the sea of mystery. And Chet points out that if we accept that knowledge is finite in a sea of inexhaustible mystery, then there's two things that follow. The first is that the growth of the island in no way diminishes the infinitude of the mystery. And the growth of the island of knowledge increases the length of the shore along which we encounter mystery. I've been told by some people that Washington State, which is where my family lives, actually has more shoreline than California because of all the little twists and turns of the Puget Sound. Knowledge draws us forward to more knowledge. Not just wonder, but wonderful knowledge. It helps us know who we are. It helps us know what we really are in this vast and joyous and wonder-filled universe. I was talking with my granddaughters the other day. My granddaughters are little babies. They don't have words yet. We often mark things like the first moment that a baby gets a word, first moment a baby takes a step, first time they have solid food. But there's something really significant that happened with my baby granddaughters just recently. They started pointing at things. This is something that no other primate does. Points at something. They just say, kind of trying to name things or wondering what name I'm going to say about that. That pointing, that sharing, that desire to share knowledge and understanding and ask questions, that's something distinctly and beautifully human. It's a powerful thing because it's part of bringing ourselves together and creating community. Now, of course, we know that some people get very clingy to their ideas and understandings. And instead of saying, huh, and hmm, they say, this is it, right? But it's very human to want to keep seeking and to create community around this adventure. This is part of what Unitarian Universalism is all about. Someone will tell you about their spiritual experience and you'll ask a question about that, and you'll tell about your experiences and they'll ask you questions, and you can come to some larger understanding of who we are and where we are and where we might be going. In this particular political age of great polarization, where people have facts and other people have alternative facts, where people have fake news and those are the very same people who are generating fake news, complaining about fake news, or people with conspiracy theories on the right and the left and they're exchanging their theories, they're not listening. They're not asking questions. They're not trying to seek the story of the universe. They're just trying to find the one story that pushes their own agenda. But imagine if we were telling the story of the universe that embraced all people of all color to seek truth wisely, to be humble before the mystery of the vast sea of mystery, and to carefully build our knowledge together. That should help us admit that we need one another, we need to help one another, and we're all in it together on this one beautiful blue ball we call Earth.